The topics and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4WN Radio.
This is Beyond Confidence with your host, Divya Parekh. Do you want to live a more fulfilling life? Do you want to live your legacy and achieve your personal, professional, and financial goals? Well, coming up on Divya Parekh's Beyond Confidence, you will hear real stories of leaders, entrepreneurs, and achievers who have stepped into discomfort, shattered their status quo, and are living the life they want. You will learn how relationships are the key to achieving your aspirations and financial goals. Moving your career or business forward does not have to happen at the expense of your personal or family life, or vice versa. Learn more at www.divyaparekh.com and you can connect with Divya at contact@divyaparekh.com. This is Beyond Confidence. And now here's your host, Divya Parekh.
Good evening, listeners. This is Divya, one of the most wonderful times of the week. And I want to share something. Probably, I would say, it was yesterday. Sometimes time just gels together. It was morning time, Sunday, you know, just kind of chilling. And there was this jolt and things in the China cabinet rattled. And it was a frighteningly familiar experience of earthquakes in California. And I've been through one of the biggest, pretty big earthquake. I think so it was around like 7.0 in Cali in 1990s. And this was just reminiscent of it. And we kind of looked it up and we found it was around 5.0 in North Carolina. And it was probably like, you know, a couple of hours away from the place where I live in. And that brought back a lot of things back in perspective, full circle, being grateful. And when we talk about being grateful is not taking things for granted and appreciating the people that we have, appreciating the gift of life itself. So folks, I wanted to share, if you get your copy of Expert to Influencer, How to Position Yourself for Meaningful Impact, it's available on Amazon. Profits from it go to Kiva.org, especially entrepreneurs who are impacted by COVID-19. I'm delighted to share, just recently, we were able to share a loan with a couple who, in US folks, who do the fresh farm, which is farm to table food. So if you have not got your copy, do get your copy and let's all together join hands and help each other out. So for our today's show, we have Todd Pressman. Welcome, Todd.
Thank you. What a pleasure to be here, Divya. Thank you.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. So folks, Todd is very strong in fear. And here's what I'm going to share about him. He's a psychologist, award-winning speaker, and internationally recognized expert on anxiety. And he has a pretty varied background, and we will be talking to him about that, where he has used a lot of different techniques with CEOs, Olympic athletes, and everyday person who's seeking greater fulfillment. So Todd, let's get started. When you were a kid, we are going to go back in time a little bit in your life. Can you share with us, if you recall, any remarkable moments that have stayed with you until now?
Well, that's a very interesting way to start. And I'm always excited about interesting questions. It's such a broad one. I could pick many, but let's see. Your listeners may be interested to know, a competitive figure skater. Doesn't seem like it has a whole lot to do with being a psychologist, but I did do some sports psychology for figure skaters later in life. And one particular moment that I am thinking of at this time is when I landed my first double axel. I don't know if your listeners would know what that is. But back in the day, that was actually a pretty advanced jump. Today, they do quadruples, which just blows the mind. But the first moment I landed a double axel was a high like I've rarely experienced. It was like everything fell into place. All the puzzle pieces of the universe came together. And I just landed that thing and was ecstatic. So there's one sort of irrelevant to what I do today piece of information about my background, but it sure was a fun memory.
Well, sounds like it. How old were you then?
Oh, gosh. Well, I skated from the ages of 10 till 19, so I would probably have been around 17, I'm going to guess, at the time. Yeah.
Nice. So if you were to just focus on that sport, what would you say was your biggest takeaway?
From that moment or that sport?
From that sport.
Oh, wow. That was very influential in my background. I learned to love discipline and to, you know, really push myself past my limits to discover my potential. And, you know, the discipline can be taken too far. I now know as a psychologist, so we don't want to sort of whip ourselves. But discipline provides a structure when it's done correctly that I think makes fulfillment possible. And even though, as you introduced me, I do focus on helping people with anxiety, it's really because when we resolve anxiety, we open up a doorway to fulfillment and our greatest potential, the double axel being just one example.
Definitely, it makes sense. So here's the thing that, you know, as you move through your life with, that was actually one of my favorite sports to watch, not to do. And there always used to be drama. You know, I still recall the time between Tanya Harding and
Nancy Kerrigan. Yeah.
Nancy Kerrigan. And just how, you know, it was later on found out that the gentleman who was whatever that happened, you know, the incidents, don't want to go into too much details with Nancy Kerrigan, who tripped her up. It was Tanya's boyfriend. And there's always been that sense of fascination around that. So that said, have you ever continued doing ice skating? I'm sure you do that during times of holidays, but other than that, have you pursued it or not?
Well, yeah, I'm getting to be an older man now. I'm going to turn 60 in October, so my body doesn't like to torture itself quite like that. It was very fun when my body was as resilient as it was when I was in my teens. But I go for fun every now and then. I take my daughter, who loves it. But, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned the Tanya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan story. I knew Nancy, and we actually skated at the same rink for part of my training. She's a lovely person. And if we try to make a, I think, legitimate tie-in to the topic of anxiety, why did Tanya Harding need to arrange that and involve her boyfriend? Because you might say there was a type of anxiety. For her, it was the anxiety of not winning the competition. And when we have anxiety of any sort, which masquerades as all kinds of negative emotions, we should talk about how I think anxiety is at the root of any negative emotion. When we have anxiety of any sort, what do? We want to get control over it. And this was Tanya Harding's way of getting control over it. But all of us have that sort of bent toward trying to get control over the outer circumstances. And that's why we suffer, because the outer circumstances don't always comply with our wishes, right? So part of the...
absolutely. Yeah, and we'll get into that. Let's get to know who Todd is first, and then we'll dive into fear and anxiety and all the cool stuff, you know.
Sure.
So... as part of your college and all that, did you know what you wanted to be?
No, not in college. I guess I was sort of raised by a father who was a physician and happened to be a psychoanalyst. But I like to say I'm a third generation Freudian, because he was trained by students of Freud. So I was expecting to go to medical school, but found myself in an kind of a biology class, a biochemistry class at college. And I thought, this is just not for me. And I rebelled and had about a 2-week stint as a theater arts major. And then my loving parents said, why don't you try a psychology class? And it happened that a friend of mine was taking a psychology class with a man named Martin Seligman, who is the founder of positive psychology. Your listeners may have heard of that. And that's what launched me into a career as a psychologist.
Oh, I'm sure, you know, Anybody who has danced in the area of fear or anxiety has heard of Martin Seligman. He's one of the celebrated authorities in that field of all times.
Yes.
So did you have a chance to meet him?
Well, as I say, he was the professor of my first psychology class.
Oh, and there you go.
Yeah, he also, I don't know if he'd want me telling this story. He was the, I forget what they called it, the resident advisor or something like that, the person in charge of one of the dormitories. So he had a very nice living situation there. And I got to know him a little bit that way, informally, but it's not necessarily a part of his background, I guess he shares. But that was how I did get to know him a little bit better. And I have a dear friend now who's taken his master's degree in positive psychology, and we've had some conversation, Martin Seligman and I, through her.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. And so would you say that as you knew him, you know, he did coin positive psychology and multiple other philosophies. Did he embody that?
Oh, well, you know, that's a very interesting question, because when I was in college, this was at the University of Pennsylvania, his big theory at the time was learned helplessness, the idea that we learn to be helpless, and that's what creates depression. Then it was a few years later that he turned that into learned optimism. So he flipped it on its head and said, if we can learn to be helpless and depressed, we can learn to be optimistic. And that evolved into positive psychology. So I don't know. I guess, you know, he was very much an academic psychologist at the time, which meant that he was busy doing research and publishing. And, you know, those informal moments in the dormitory, he was just a regular guy. I don't know if I had any direct experience with whether he embodied it or not, but he's certainly done wonderful things for the field since then.
Yep. So if you were to say that, you know, knowing Martin Seligman, what would you say, knowing him personally, were a couple of his attributes that really resonated with you and touched you in your heart? Because so many times, you know, we talk about analytically, and yet people do think with their heart rather than rationally, because as you know, as it goes in marketing, right, people buy emotionally and then justify it logically.
True. So, and I do think, though, that he embodied a very nice combination of head and heart, because the thing that made the biggest impact on me was, you know, what I learned from him in the psychology class I took. That first psychology class was in abnormal psychology. So we were talking about different forms of pathology or psychiatric disorders. And I had a patient years ago who had multiple personalities. And she had a complete cure of integrating 72 different personalities, and then went on to become a very spiritual person. She actually gives spiritual counseling sessions to people now, based on the journey that she undertook in therapy. But Dr. Seligman actually was the one who made the first impression on me about how to work with people with multiple personalities. I remember that vividly, and this is going back to 1980, probably. So his intellect was really impressive, and then his passion for teaching, because there was that course turned me on to a whole career of psychology. I'm sure I would have found my way there anyway, because I was kind of born to it, but that's what got me started, yeah.
No, that's fantastic. So as you finished your psychology degree, how did your life evolve and how did you get entrenched into that? And just tell us your journey from there until now.
Sure. Well, I knew that I wanted to be a psychologist from then on. So I majored in psychology in undergraduate school and then took a master's degree and a doctorate in psychology. My doctorate, I guess that's putting the cart before the horse. Here's the other major piece of my background in terms of psychology. Of course, my father, being a psychoanalyst, had quite the influence on me, and my mother happened to have been a social worker. So really, what chance did I have, right? A psychologist, a psychiatrist and a social worker got together and made a psychologist. But it was my father who started becoming very avant-garde, and here he was raised in the most traditional circles of psychoanalysis. And, you know, when he was coming of age, he said that was the only game in town. The treatment for schizophrenia, he would say, back then was hot and cold baths. Can you imagine? That's all that they knew to do for schizophrenics. And then, you know, shock therapy came along and some of the first psychoactive drugs. But when my father started his own, let's say, spiritual journey, he began to look at Eastern psychology. And he was a huge fan of the teachings of some of the masters from the East, like Sri Aurobindo and Madame Blavatsky and so forth. And at that time, I was, again, in my teens, and I was starting to ask those big existential questions like all good adolescents ask, you know, why are we here? And what's the meaning of it all? And who am I really? And I overheard my father talking about some of the things he was reading about. And he said some things like, everything is oneness and all is consciousness. And I said to myself, I don't really know what that means, but it has the ring of truth to it. And I started having conversations with him. And that launched my path in what I would call spiritual or holistic or transpersonal psychology, which is very much what I do today. And I actually then went on to a graduate school, which had a track in consciousness studies that was very exciting, and worked with some very well-renowned leaders in the field like Stanley Krippner and Stanislav Grof. And then the last part of the journey, which answers your question, is that I was very fortunate in 1982, when I was a senior in college, I took a semester abroad, but this was on a program called Semester at Sea, which some of your listeners may know about. It was a remarkable program on a ship that took us literally around the world. And we could take whatever courses we wanted. And I chose to study a bunch of religious studies courses and anthropology courses because, again, I was interested in psychology and philosophy and now some of the more spiritual approaches to these things. And I had some just remarkable experiences working with a Zoroastrian high priest in Mumbai and Sri Lankan firewalkers and Balinese fakirs. And all of these things really opened my mind to the possibilities of human potential way beyond what most people think, you know, is available to us. So that's a bit of my background.
Well, that's great. You know, you've been through several different journeys. So let's explore. A lot of people, see, I come from India and I've never looked at India being a place for a spiritual journey, because when you grow up with something, it's very much, you take it for granted and it's kind of part of your journey. You've never looked at it differently. Versus, as you talked about Aurobindo, you know, like we are all connected. And that definitely resonates with me, because think about it, is when you're talking about that oneness, we all are connected with that thread of our desires, our sufferings, our pains, and just having that desire to do something good for somebody else. So when you went to Sri Lanka and India, can you share your experience from there?
Absolutely. And India happens to be one of my favorite countries. Remarkable place and beautiful people. I remember getting off a bus, and frankly, I don't even remember which city it was. This was a long time ago, and they blurred together a little bit. But it was a very crowded intersection of five streets, and there wasn't anything special about this intersection. But right there in the middle of the intersection was an altar to a guru who was the guru of a spiritual master that I had read, whose works I had read. His name was Swami Muktananda, and the altar was to his guru, Swami Nityananda. And it was just so wonderful. I can't think of a big enough word to come from America, get off of a bus in India, and have this connection, speaking of oneness. And, you know, there were beautiful flowers at the altar. I'm sure you know the name, I don't, of the orange flowers that they make garlands out of, and the incense was going in the middle of a busy intersection. So that moment impressed upon me what a spiritual country India is. And, you know, how, as you said, if you grow up with that, it's just part of who you are. I felt very much at home, like I had arrived. So many other experiences I could share. The Zoroastrian priest was just a remarkable gentleman who he truly, truly embodied the message of love. And, you know, in Zoroastrianism, they talk about good deeds, good thoughts, and good actions. He lived that all the way. It was just this big man in body and spirit that exuded an extraordinary energy of peace and love and confidence that made quite the impact on me. And I also stayed with a Jain family, a family who followed the Jain religion, where they have such a reverence for life that they actually put out sugar in the kitchen to feed the ants each night. How's that for a culture shock? But again, I learned so much from them and their reverence for life, their gratitude for all creation. On and on, I could go. It was just, again, a remarkable experience.
Mm-hmm. So you talk about that deconstructing anxiety. That all begins with one single core fear, which is at the root of all struggles in our lives. So can you tell, what is that core fear?
Wonderful. Well, there are five core fears that I believe we human beings buy into. These are universal themes of loss, and all of us have them. They are fear of abandonment, right? Loss of love. The fear of losing our identity, the sense of who we really are. Loss of meaning, the sense of our value and our worth, what we call self-esteem in psychology. Loss of purpose, a little bit different than loss of meaning. Purpose is about having a big goal that makes a difference. We need to express ourselves and our talents and our gifts to make a difference out there. And the fifth one is the fear of death or loss of life. Of course, we all have that to different degrees. We all have some of each of these five core fears. But the important thing to know is that everybody finds one that's really the change maker in their lives. We're little kids, relatively whole and complete, assuming that we're born into a good family. And then we meet fear. It's inevitable. It's part of the human condition. And we make up some interpretation and about how life can be threatening or scary or dangerous. And that interpretation is a core fear. And it follows us through our lives. And it's like wearing colored glasses. Those are the colors that we see the world as informed by. So from the moment that we decide on our core fear in childhood, let's say it's a fear of abandonment, every other situation from then on is going to be checked out according to whether this situation might threaten me with abandonment. So, you know, we're a little infant and mom leaves the room. We don't know that that's not forever. We think we might have been abandoned. And that's like life or death, because if the infant is abandoned, they will die. But mom comes back and we start to learn little by little, okay, I can do something to make sure I don't get abandoned. Maybe I scream, maybe I fuss, maybe I fidget, maybe I wait patiently. Something that I do creates the return of my mother so that I don't have to feel that core fear of abandonment. And that thought that I can do something, here's my strategy for how to make life safe again, is what I call the chief defense. So the core fear and the chief defense combine together, and that makes up our personality. Every moment from then on, we're looking at the world through the lens of our core fear, and we're ready to respond with our chief defense. That's our personality. Everything that we need to know boils down to those two things. And if we can get our hands on what our core fear is and what our chief defense is, which I do talk about in the Deconstructing Anxiety program, we're golden. We really have an opportunity to resolve fear and open up to beyond confidence, our full potential.
Mm-hmm. So you do share multiple exercises How about sharing your exercise digging for gold?
Oh, I'd love to. Very good, because it's sort of the cornerstone of the whole model. This is how we find our core fear, and it's not yet enough to resolve it or fix it, but it is enough to explain all of our decisions in life. You know, when we're not really centered in the present moment, happy, fulfilled, and confident, we're coming from the core fear. So there's a lot of power in discovering what that core fear is. Here's how the digging for gold exercise goes. We start out with a problem, and it can be any problem because they're all going to deconstruct down to the core fear. And we imagine writing it on the top left of a piece of paper. We want to state the problem in a short single phrase. So for example, it might be, I don't have enough money. And then on the right side of that same line, we ask one of three questions. The questions are, why is that upsetting to me? What am I afraid would happen next? And what am I afraid I would miss or lose? Let me just say those again. Why is that upsetting to me? What am I afraid would happen next? And what am I afraid I would miss or lose? These are just different forms of the question. What's the fear underneath that problem? If we get underneath it, we're one step closer to the core fear at the very root of everything that troubles us. So if my problem is I don't have enough money, and I ask, why is that upsetting to me? The answer might be, well, I won't be able to pay my bills, right? And that answer goes on the second line on the left side underneath the first problem. So again, we're one level closer, deeper to the core fear. Then we ask one of those three questions again on the right side. If I can't pay my bills, what am I afraid would happen next? Doesn't matter which of the three questions you ask, whichever one seems like it'll be most fruitful. And if I can't pay my bills, what am I afraid will happen next? I might lose my home, right? And then we do the same thing. If I lose my home, that's on the third line on the left side, one level closer to the core fear. What am I afraid I'd miss or lose? And it might be my safety, right? I'll be out on the street and I won't have any protection. We put that on the fourth line on the left side. If I lose my safety, if I'm out on the street, what am I afraid would happen next? I might die of exposure. That would be a simple, very simplistic kind of example of finding a core fear of death. Now, here's the interesting part. We can't predict how that chain is going to go until we go through the exercise meticulously step by step. Here's an example. I had a patient who I knew his background. He was a very successful physician, and he was a real overachiever. So when he started out with a problem of, you know, my boss gave me a bad report, and I asked him, why was that upsetting to you? And he said, well, I might lose my job. And I said, what are you afraid would happen next? I thought he might say something like, yeah, I'll lose my house, or I'll be out on the street, or I won't be able to pay my bills or provide for my family. But no, he said, if I lose my job, I'll lose the respect of my colleagues. And that went down to a core fear of losing his identity. And it made so much sense because his childhood was one where his father was very severe, very strict, and my patient could never please his father well enough. So that was his core fear. I'm going to lose my identity. I'm not going to be who I want to be for my father. And guess what his chief defense was? His way of protecting himself from that core fear: to become super ambitious and overachiever. I'll prove to my father that I'm worthy. I'll do all this. I have 5 offices. I'm a big famous physician and so forth. And it was running him into the ground. He was full of anxiety. It was never enough to please the father in his mind and so forth. So that turned his life around when he really got that deep insight into his core fear. That's an example of how this process works. It's very powerful. When you see your core fear, it's this great big aha moment that says, now I understand why I've been acting the way I've been acting my whole life and thinking the way I've been thinking my whole life. Now I have some control because I can look at it from a distance and say, I don't have to automatically respond that way. I can make some free choice and be self-determining in how I create my life from here forward.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So entrepreneurs have been impacted tremendously during COVID-19. Now, I would like for you to just kind of take any entrepreneur who's in COVID-19. Not only they've moved from old normal to new normal, and this new normal is going to take them to next normal. And complexity and uncertainty is the name of the game right now. So what fear they would be facing, and how can they deconstruct it to get into a place of fulfillment?
Well, that's a great question, because as I just mentioned a moment ago, everybody is going to have their own version of how they respond to the challenges of our times. They're going to have their own core fear and their own particular slant on it according to what they learned in childhood. So I can't say entrepreneurs who are suffering because of COVID-19 will have this core fear. Every individual has to go through that digging for gold process themselves to not only find their core fear, but really see how it's operating behind the scenes. I like to use the metaphor of the man behind the curtain in the Wizard of Oz, right? We're fixated on our fear, and it looks like this big, scary wizard with smoke and flames. And then Toto draws the curtain back, and there's this kindly old man just pulling some levers and dials, which is what's happening in the back of our head. So again, when we find our core fear and see that it's just the result of certain buttons or levers and dials that we learned long, long ago that keep getting triggered by our outside circumstances, then we have some power to make change. But I can give you an interesting example to speak to your point. And this is, I think, relevant because this person's story was so different from some of the other COVID stories about people who are struggling financially right now or whose businesses are going under and so forth. This example is of a woman who had a daycare, and it's a past tense. She had a daycare. She lost it as a result of COVID-19. And she's a very sweet woman, loves children, is wonderful with children. And this was her life's purpose. So losing that purpose brought up her core fear, which is, you know, what am I going to do with my life now, but who am I? She also had a core fear of loss of identity. If I'm not the owner of this preschool with this purpose of helping children, you know, grow up into healthy, functioning human adults, who am I really? So we went through the digging for gold exercise and found that core fear. And again, it was this terrific aha moment. She said, now I understand why this has been driving me so crazy. She suffered a lot. She had to move in with her children. Luckily, they were very welcoming and they had a new child themselves. So she was very happy to be a live-in grandmother. But she found her opportunity to transform that fear of not being able to help the kids at the daycare into helping her children take care of their new son and her grandson. It was a beautiful reframe, a way of transforming pain into fulfillment just by understanding her core fear. She needed to find a new sense of identity, and a new way to channel her gifts and her talents and her love for children. And she did.
Yeah. And that's the key, that these are unprecedented times. Adversities are going to be there. And the biggest thing about these times are that, you know, most of the world has been impacted. And it's, if you take a look at silver lining, it has brought humanity together. Mm. Some ways it has been divisive. Overall, if we take a look at the situation that has happened, is that, think about it, you know, people used to be inside the house so much, and now this has literally made us go back to some of the old traditions where, for example, like, you know, for us it was playing outdoors, and it's even when my kids were young, you know, we would just kind of push them out, even though there were Xbox and Nintendo and all those wonderful stuff. Go out, play, get those creative juices flowing. And now you're seeing that, you know, what has happened is, the silver lining is that humans are so adept. Humans are wonderful at taking those challenges and rising to the occasion. So recently I was listening on NPR as to one of the hardest hit communities is folks who are in movie industry, acting industry, art industry. that they have started now audio programs where they're doing storytelling, either it's in monologue or even creating audio drama. So what's amazing is that during these times, innovation does come through. And that said, most people cannot see that. So yes, you have mentioned about how we can go about deconstructing fear. So let's say people have found that fear, they know where it is, but how can they keep things inside where they're able to see positive things, see the silver lining, and also see the challenge for what it is? Because it doesn't pay to push your problems underneath the rug and just kind of think everything will go away.
Well, I've just been listening a bit enraptured. I agree so wholeheartedly with everything you've said, and would add that another silver lining is we're seeing the world, the world is understanding how interconnected we all are in a way that we've never, the world has never gone through a common struggle like this together before. It was always, you know, them over there or us over here, and we are truly in this together. Of course, there's a lot of polarizing also that's happening as people get caught up in fear. And that's how I would answer your question. I think it's really the key to resolving anxiety, but more importantly, living a truly successful, fulfilled life. The key is, or let's start this way, the difference between someone who gets lost in their fear and caught up in the anxiety of the times and wallows in their suffering, I don't mean that critically, but really gets lost in it, and someone who can successfully transform the problem into an opportunity. We all know the Chinese character for crisis means both for danger means both crisis. I beg your pardon. I think it's for crisis means both danger and opportunity, right? So those of us who see danger and get lost in a perception of fear versus those of us who see opportunity, the difference is whether they have insight into their core fear and their chief defense. So here's that master key I promised. The master key for turning anxiety into fulfillment is to see our chief defense. Remember, that's our way of protecting ourselves from our core fear, which always backfires. It just creates more fear. See our chief defense and, quote, do the opposite. When we do the opposite of our habit of running from fear or trying to control fear or getting lost in the fear and thinking about it over and over and over and magnifying it, we do the opposite of that and we find what George Bernard Shaw called a mighty purpose. He had a beautiful quote, began with, "This is the true joy in life, the being used by a purpose considered by yourself as a mighty one, than being a force of nature instead of a feverish, selfish little clod of ailments and grievances, complaining that the world will not devote itself to making me happy." And then he goes on and he says, "I want to be thoroughly used up when I die, for the harder I work, the more I live," and so forth. When we can see how our core fear and our chief defense have been weighing us down, then get that distance from them and say, those are just old messages I've learned from the past. Go through some of the exercises which really help us see that they are not real. They do not have the power to stop us. Then the pathway to fulfillment opens. And you know what's interesting, Divya? The five core fears, the fear of abandonment, loss of identity, loss of meaning, loss of purpose, and the fear of death, they turn into the five ingredients for fulfillment, where we find fulfillment in love and we find fulfillment in an authentic identity and a deeply fulfilling meaning and purpose. And we can even come to a peaceful acceptance of death, which makes living in the present moment more possible, more full, and more rich. So that's how I would answer your question. We do the opposite of the chief defense. We stop trying to manage our fear. We see that it's made up, which is easier said than done, but then there are exercises where we can really have success with that. They're in the program, the Deconstructing Anxiety Program. And then that pathway to fulfillment opens up spontaneously. The fear vanishes. We see it was an illusion, and there's nothing stopping us from our higher meaning and purpose and identity and love.
Mm-hmm. Definitely makes sense. It's about flipping and goes back to a similar philosophy that you are the frame, change the picture, and life becomes something different, looking at life through another lens. Definitely that has an impact looking at things. So now that said, people, so for example, you know, we are doing maybe one or two of the strategies that you have implied, and not everybody is going to know. And that's the reason we do the podcast, we do share the information so that it helps people. And yet at times there are situations when people are not just willing to acknowledge what they're facing. What would you recommend in those situations?
Very good question. Two things. First, a person has to get to a point where, yes, they realize their defenses are not working. Their strategies for trying to get control over fear or problems backfires, makes the problem worse. It might give relief for a moment, but then you're constantly thinking, when's the problem going to return? And you're filling your mind with, what if my control wasn't successful or wasn't strong enough and I have to amp it up and try harder? And we just live on this sort of hamster wheel of always chasing after a control over fear that we can't get. So we have to realize, we have to get sick and tired of being sick and tired, as they say. We have to realize it doesn't work. And unfortunately, it's often pain and suffering that brings us to that point. It doesn't have to be. We can simply say with positivity and optimism, I want to live the richest, fullest life possible. I know there's more for me than, you know, the rat race. And you feel driven by the call to joy rather than an escape from fear. So that's answer number one. You know, in therapy, I can't help someone who doesn't want to be helped. Luckily, they wouldn't be coming to therapy if they didn't want to be helped. But they usually come saying, Doc, I want you to wave a magic wand so I don't have to change anything. Life just gets better, right? We have to do the work. And that work, again, means turning inward, looking at that core fear, the true root of the problem, which is very rarely seen in therapy or spirituality. It takes some courage and some honesty. But then with the exercises in the Deconstructing Anxiety program, it actually becomes very easy and effortless to transform that fear and watch it disperse into sort of a cloud that just empties into the universe. People have used descriptions like that. So it's facing the fear in gentle but steady ways, according to the exercises in the program, that shows the fear to be an illusion. And again, that does not have to involve any kind of suffering or confrontation with our demons. Some people choose that path and it can work, but I prefer an easier, more joyful path. It's simply a matter of looking at it from a distance. One of the exercises in Deconstructing Anxiety is called the witness. And it's an enhanced mindfulness exercise where we look from a distance. I keep using that phrase, but in this case, like a witness, a neutral observer of our intense emotions and the physical sensations that they bring. So when we're saying these are just sensations, they don't mean anything that I've attributed to them because I just made that up in childhood. These are just sensations. And we go in the exercise through a series of qualities of the sensation, like its shape and its weight and its texture and its temperature and its movement and so forth, the flavor of it, the smell of it. You really bring that sensation to life as not a bad or a scary thing, but an interesting thing, like a demonstration of the life force within us. And we observe it like a witness. And then we repeat silently, it's okay for this sensation to just float there quietly. It doesn't have to go away. Now, in saying it doesn't have to go away, we're doing the opposite of our chief defense. We're not running after it or running away from it or trying to control it or manipulate it. We're letting it float there quietly. And we tell ourselves, it must not be scary if it's not making me try and manipulate it. You don't have to try to tell yourself that. It happens spontaneously. And again, the space around that sensation expands and expands and expands unto infinity until there's no more clench, there's no more tension and tightness the way that fear brings. That tight, sort of constricted sense of anxiety opens up and expands and disperses until it just floats away. And again, I'm quoting some of my patients and workshop participants when I use that phrase, it floats away. Many people have used that phrase, and everybody seems to discover that the fear isn't real. It's not what we have made it up to be. So that's some of the power of these exercises that makes me so excited about them.
Absolutely. So if people wanted to reach out to you, how would they connect with you and share your book, and where is it available and how can they get that?
Thank you for asking. Well, my website, you can get the book on Amazon or through my website. Two names for the same website, whichever one's easier to remember, deconstructinganxiety.com or my name, toddpressman.com. I'll also invite your listeners to sign up for a free ebook that I love to give away called Quotes and Stories That Can Change Your Life. And these are really fun quotes and stories that do have tremendous power to make change. The George Bernard Shaw quote that I used earlier is in there, for example. And another one of my favorites is, my life was filled with terrible misfortunes, most of which never happened, right? So I definitely encourage people to sign up for the free ebook, and they can get on my newsletter and learn about our offerings. We have a very exciting Deconstructing Anxiety 3-day intensive coming up August 27th through 30th. And you can learn about that on the website as well.
Well, wonderful. It was a pleasure having you on the show. And thank you for sharing your insights with us.
It was a pleasure being here. Thank you for having me, Divya.
Absolutely. Listeners, thank you for joining us. And without you, the show would not be possible. And thank you to Rebel for making the show possible. Until next time, be well, be brilliant, and take care.
Thank you for being part of Beyond Confidence with your host, Divya Parekh. We hope you have learned more about how to start living the life you want. Each week on Beyond Confidence, you hear stories of real people who have experienced growth by overcoming their fears and building meaningful relationships. During Beyond Confidence, Divya Parekh shares what happened to her when she stepped out of her comfort zone to work directly with people across the globe. She not only coaches people how to form heart connections, but also transform relationships to mutually beneficial partnerships as they strive to live the life they want. If you are ready to live the life you want and leverage your strengths, learn more at www.divyaparekh.com. And you can connect with Divya at contact@divyaparekh.com. We look forward to you joining us next week, Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time.